Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. We're providing you news and commentary rooted in a commitment to individual liberty, personal responsibility, limited government, and the rule of law. Coming up, we're going to visit with John Miltimore. He is the editor-at-large for fee.org. Right now, we have with us Mark Shulman. Mark is the founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. It's called historycentral.com. I hope you check it out. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here on the show.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Mark is located in Tel Aviv, right in the midst of the heart of the conflicts that are going on. Mark, let's start off with what's happening in Israel, Gaza, and other related issues related to the Middle East.
Okay, so it's a complicated layer of issues. In the ground war in Gaza, Israel has more or less seized almost all the northern half of the Gaza Strip. There's still one area that it's still working to seize. And it's, you know, seized the five hospitals in the north, under which almost all of them they found signs that the hospitals have been used as centers for Hamas.
Wow.
What they have not done is successfully rescued more than they rescued one hostage, and until now, all they've managed to receive is to find three bodies of hostages. At least two of them were sure, probably all three of them killed by Hamas at some point. So the question is, what's with the other hostages?
Yeah.
There's talk of a deal that would provide 5 days of ceasefire in return for returning 50 of the women and children. The talk of that has been going on for a whole bunch of days. It has not happened yet. The concern about Israel is they'll take this deal and then they have nothing to do for the rest of the 190 hostages left. So it's unclear, and it's unclear when and if that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
People are holding their breath, and you know it's very difficult. I mean, it happens to be that I live very close to where hostage families demonstrate, so I see them all the time. And what do you say to people like that?
I know.
Especially ones that have 5 or 7 year old kids being held hostage somewhere underground in Gaza.
So sad.
So very, very difficult. On the larger picture, the North continues to be continued missile strikes and rocket attacks. Supposedly, up until now, there have been over 1,000 rockets fired from the North, but only in the limited area around the border.
Hmm.
In other words, they're not escalating beyond the border. Hezbollah, until now, seems uninterested in a full-scale war. That might have something to do with what the Iranians want and don't want. It's understood there was a conversation leaked between the supreme leader of Iran and one of the leaders of Hamas, where A, he was furious that they had launched this attack without telling them, B, he said it was a stain on Islam, and C, worse than that, it brought American forces back into the Middle East in numbers, primarily the two carrier battle groups that are sitting, one in the Mediterranean, one in the Red Sea right now. On the other hand, it hasn't stopped the Iranian ally, the Houthis, which are in Yemen, from A, sending occasional missiles at Israel, all of which have been intercepted by Israel's missile-to-missile defense system, and B, yesterday they seized a ship, which they claimed was an Israeli ship. In reality, it's a ship that an Israeli businessman owns some portion of, but it's a ship that was flagged in the Bahamas, plying between Turkey and India and having a crew with no Israelis on board. So I'm not really sure what they accomplished other than piracy on the high seas, which is usually something more than anything else the U.S. Navy takes care of, because that's one of the key functions of the U.S. Navy these days in the world, is to keep the sea lanes of the world open from pirates. And, you know, we've gone all the way back. That's been the role of the U.S. Navy going back to the Barbary pirates in the early 1800s. So
right. Well, the interesting thing, though, is does this jeopardize the flow of goods and services through the canal there?
Not so much the canal, but from continuation after the canal, it can theoretically do that. So that's why it's considered a very bad act, you know, particularly for Egypt, which earned so much revenue from the canal passage.
Yeah.
So it's not good. But again, that's ultimately, I think the United States Navy will we'll make sure it doesn't happen again, because that's really, it's been a traditional role. I mean, you can talk about the various things America's done overseas, but literally, that was the first major overseas action of the U.S. Navy or the U.S. government at all, when the U.S. Navy, you know, attacked the pirates off of Tripoli and the Barbary pirates and successfully ended piracy in the Mediterranean way back when.
1776, I think it was.
No, no, that's 1801, 1802, 1776 was independence. So
yeah.
That's they were also the year the U.S. Navy was founded.
Right.
So that's portion of it. And then, of course, the question is, you know, look, there's a tremendous humanitarian disaster being created in Gaza. There's no question about that. But no one knows any other solution, quite honestly. And that's the tragedy of it all.
It is a tragedy. I said, of all places, I saw an article in CNN. In fact, I may still have it here, but it was a former Special Forces guy who is saying, actually, Israel is following urban warfare rules and to the letter of the law, which is kind of reassuring. It's because
it clearly absolutely is. But urban warfare is terrible anyway,
right?
Especially when you have an enemy that has put themselves inside civilian population, which violates international law of the war.
Right.
So they've been violating it consistently. International legal law says basically that if there's collateral damage because the opposing forces are within civilian population and doing this on purpose, then you're allowed to attack. But, you know, it doesn't make it any easier. It doesn't really, you know what I'm saying? In other words, yes, Israel is absolutely following the law. It's not creating, there's no such thing as, you know, all these chants about genocide, which is absurd considering the fact that the population in Gaza has increased 5 times over the last 40 years. So genocide is pretty hard to do when the population is growing. But yes, it's a terrible thing for these people. I feel for them. But these are their leaders, and they also, public opinion polls, that one public opinion that's come out from Gaza and the West Bank shows there's overwhelming support for Hamas.
Yeah.
So now what do you do?
Exactly. So we're going to leave that. I want to talk to you about what's happening in Ukraine, this election in Argentina and more. Mark, can you stick around?
Absolutely, Bob.
All right. We're going to have more here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Are you looking to buy or sell a home? Make it a convenient and stress-free experience by calling the dynamic and trustworthy husband and wife team of Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties. Find out about their unique and complimentary post-closing concierge services not offered by other area agents. Matt and Megan Chionis give you the competitive advantage to command a premium price for your property. They personally attend all showings, create a marketing strategy for your property, and offer that complimentary concierge service to your potential buyer. This hands-on approach has helped them set several sales records in Pelican Bay and many at near-record prices. Megan and Matt Chionis understand that as an affluent buyer-seller, your needs and desires are unique. You deserve this level of service. Megan and Matt Chionis are passionate about the Naples lifestyle and they want you to enjoy it too. Call Megan and Matt Chionis with Gulf Coast International Properties at 239-269-5310. That's 239-269-5310. You have questions about your retirement? Ameriprise Private Wealth Advisor Jason Nardella with Nardella Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, can help. With the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach, you'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap to get you where you want to go. Call Nardella Financial Group today at 239-325-1041. That's 239-325-1041. Office is located at 9015 Stratistel Court, Suite 103, Naples, Florida. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to the Bob Harden Show. And now here's your host, Bob Harden.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the show. It's brought to you in part by the Foundation for Government Accountability. They help prepare elected officials to perform in the state legislatures, and you can find out more by visiting the website, thefga.org. Coming up, we're going to be visiting with Jim McTagg, former Barron's Washington Bureau Chief. Right now, we continue the conversation with Mark Schulman, the founder and publisher of HistoryCentral.com. Again, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Let's move our discussion to Ukraine.
Okay, so with Ukraine, there's been an interesting development in the last week that's come somewhat unnoticed based on all of what's going on in the Gaza war. All the coverage has gone from there. The Ukrainians seem to have had a breakthrough in their counteroffensive. They crossed the Dnieper River and now control a significant amount of real estate on the other side of the Dnieper, which was one of the natural defensive lines that the Russians have. And they seem to be expanding their bridgehead every day. So while everything's been quiet, this seems to be going on. How far they're going to be able to go with that is unclear. But from what I understand, the Russians are going to have a hard time finding troops to reinforce that area because they don't have reserve forces really available. So they've been obsessing about an offensive they've had in the north that has made minor progress with a humongous amount of losses, and now the Ukrainians in the center area near Kherson have made significant progress at this point. So we'll have to see. You know, you never know. In war, you make all sorts of predictions, and you can say, well, we're at a stalemate, and this and that, and then suddenly facts on the ground change suddenly. So we'll have to see where that goes.
No, I think it's Russia that's actually starting to enlist people in their 40s and 50s into the conflict.
Oh, absolutely. They were trying to enlist anybody because they don't have people left.
Yeah.
That's the reality. Remember, go back to some of our early discussions. The Russians have had a birth rate of about, you know, less than one. They're one of the lowest birth rates in the world in the last 20 years. And they have one of the lowest mortality rates for a while. And so, especially, you know, they were doing reasonably well with mortality rates in the world during the communist period because one thing that communism had was basic medical care. But they lost that too. So it's unclear what's they just don't have enough people to fight this war. And as much as we think of Russia being huge and, you know, never ending, they were having real trouble at this point fighting enough personnel willing to become or being forced to become cannon fodder.
It's so interesting. And my guess is, and I don't know this, but my guess is that there's not a mass migration, illegal or otherwise, into Russia.
No, that's definitely not. There was a big migration out of Russia.
Yeah.
Of males in military age starting at the beginning of this war, and I don't think any of them have come back. So we had a couple of 100,000 Russian males, people mostly in the high-tech world and et cetera, they all left the country.
Yeah.
So let's see where that goes at this point.
Let's pick up with Finland.
So Finland is an interesting thing where Finland is the latest member of NATO.
Mm-hmm.
One of the results of the Russian invasion of Ukraine has been the fact that Finland and Sweden requested entry. Sweden is still waiting to deal with Turkey, which is a problematic member, to say the least. You need a unanimous consent in order for a new country to join. But they did allow Finland to join, and Finland has a tremendous border with Russia, and of course not a very happy history. If you go back to your World War II history, Finland and Russia have had a war. The Russians invaded Finland, and the first part they were pushed back, and then they managed to gain control of a part of Finland, and of course, when the war ended, they pulled out. But Finland had been basically a neutral country
mm-hmm.
all these many, many years because of the Russian influence, but this war has pushed them to actually become active members of NATO. So they have a very, very large open border with Russia, literally just markers marking it the way the Canadian border used to be in the United States. And what's happened is the Russians are trying to destabilize Finland like they're trying to destabilize so much of the West. And in this case, I'm sure they're also using social media, but what they're doing is they're finding migrants. I'm not really sure how the migrants got to Russia. It's an interesting question. But they're pushing them across the Finnish border. And, of course, Finland, you know, let's put it this way. Like, no one else, including the United States, no one likes illegal migrants. Finland has taken its share of legal migrants, asylum. So the Finnish army, together with its border police, are now building a fence along this huge open border that exists between Finland and Russia. So Russia tries wherever it can to destabilize countries. That's their MO at this point.
I've got to imagine that the terrain for that, where they're building the fence, has got to be pretty severe.
Well, it's particularly the weather, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, it's all the way up north. I don't think it's that mountainous along the actual border. That's why Russia's been able to invade so many times. But it's a big, long, long border. And, you know, Finland's not a very big country in terms of population, so... But it was left to the border police to do it, but now the army is participating as well.
So interesting. So, let's move to this most interesting election in Argentina.
Absolutely. So it's a really interesting. The person who won has no political experience. He's a man out of your own heart in terms of his economic policies.
Right.
We'll have to see. He talked about destroying the, you know, blowing up the central bank, and he wants to impose the dollar as the currency of Argentina.
Right.
Let's keep in mind that the inflation rate in Argentina right now is 120% a year.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. You know, in the United States, one complains when the, you know, how high the inflation rate got, and I think at the peak it got to 9% or 8%.
Right.
It's down back to 3%. 120%. That means something that cost $10 today will cost $22 next year.
Going way back, Argentina, as I recall, was the wealthiest nation in both South or North America. It was back in 1901 in that period.
Well, it has a very rich agricultural, you know, the Argentinian beef, and it has minerals, and it's a relatively wealthy and had been a stable country. But it's gone through all sorts of upheavals,
yeah,
with, you know, Juan Perón being the dictator in charge of Argentina after World War II, and then his wife taking over. The current government is basically considered Peronist. It's not a dictatorship, but it's a Peronist government.
Right.
So it's not. He didn't win from a left wing government. He led from a semi right government, I would say. He won against the current finance minister of Argentina.
How about corrupt government?
Well, yes, corrupt and incompetent. Let's get to the most important point to Argentinians. It was an incompetent government. Any country that manages to have 120% inflation is clearly incompetent.
Yeah.
The question is, you know, will his policies work? Will he be able to implement them? Again, it's always nice, and people have voted for people who are outsiders. Whether it's, you know, various businessmen, whether it's Trump as a businessman or whoever it is, outsiders to become heads of state. It doesn't happen often, but it happens sometimes. And the big question always becomes, you know, will they be able to translate their experience, etc., in business into government?
Yeah.
Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. Interesting experiment, though. And I think it's also what's significant to me, anyhow, is the fact that all of South America seemed to be going globalist, socialist, and so forth. This is a big turnaround for a very important part of South America.
No, absolutely. I mean, Argentina's been going two ways. I mean, it's a very interesting situation, very dynamic. But you know what the best thing about it is?
Hmm.
They've been going whichever way they've been going by elections.
Yeah.
Let's remember that. You know, you and I can remember a time when there were almost no free elections in all of South America.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, whether they're turning socialist or turning radically right or turning whatever they're all doing it because the people are deciding. And we have to say that's a good thing.
And not only that, but as I recall, this election was held on Sunday. They actually had results, 92% of the vote in, and were able to declare a winner on Monday.
Right, and it was a difference of about 8% in the popular vote.
Yeah.
So, yes, absolutely. And
I think there's 46 million people. I don't know how many percent, what percent of that 46 million can vote, but I would imagine it's a pretty large percentage.
Right, absolutely. No question about it. No one's questioning the results. Even people are not happy with it.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We shall see. I don't know. It's the world is quite in turmoil, to say the least.
And then,
of course, we had the big business news this weekend, of course, with OpenAI with Sam Altman, the founder, being ousted by his board, and as of this morning, he's now working for Microsoft.
Yes, that's so interesting indeed. Again, Mark Shulman, founder and publisher of a terrific multimedia website. I hope you check it out, HistoryCentral.com. Good for kids of all ages, HistoryCentral.com. Mark, really appreciate your most up-to-the-date commentary here on what's happening on the globe. Thanks so much for joining us.
Have a great week, Bob.
You as well. Thank you. All right, coming up, we're going to visit with John Miltimore. He is the editor-at-large for fee.org. That and more right here on The Bob Harden Show on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.
Stay tuned for more of The Bob Harden Show here on the Bob Harden Broadcasting Network.